Welcome. I'm Christina Michelle, inviting you to join me for Culture Rich Conversations, an ongoing feature of Juno Afternoon. This week, as we continue our celebration of Black History Month, we are having a roundtable discussion about Black love in honor of Valentine's Day. Today, my guests and I will dive into the Black lived experience of building loving relationships that last. Our couples will share their personal stories of love, commitment, and longevity in this very special episode. We'll debunk the misconceptions and stereotypes regarding Black love and shine a light on the truth. From KTOO in Juneau, this is Culture Rich Conversations.
Culture Rich Conversations is made possible by a grant from the Social Justice Fund grant program of the Alaska Community Foundation.
Culture Rich Conversations on Juno Afternoon is sponsored in part by Mark Stofa and Sarah Hannon of the Alaska Wild Salmon Company, delivering fresh salmon to Juno homes since 2006. Learn more at goodsalmon.com or 907-321-4997.
The Black Awareness Association would like to take a moment to recognize that Culture Rich Conversations is broadcast from Thlinkit Ani. We acknowledge those families who made use of this land and waterways for thousands of years and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and future generations. Gunalshchish, thank you.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
Welcome to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Today, I'm having a conversation with three couples. They're here to talk about Black love just in time for Valentine's Day and to share their experience so we can begin to normalize Black loving relationships. Our three couples joining us today are Michael Marie and Lori Grace, residing in California. Our producer and her husband, Natasha Boozer and O'Neill Castells, joining us from Nevada. And Kyle Paw and Jamie Cowlin, who are Juno locals. Welcome, everyone. I am so excited to have this conversation. So we will get started. I will ask each of you to just introduce yourself and share a little bit about your relationship, like if you're married, if you are partnered, how long you've been together, et cetera. And then we'll dive like deeper into the conversation. So I am going to start with Michael Marie and Miss Lori Grace.
Approaching 3 years, coming up April the 10th, and we are looking to get married next year on April 20th, 2024.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome. Okay. And Natasha and O'Neill.
We've been together for over 20 years and married for 20 years this Christmas Eve.
Yay!
For quite a long time. Thank you.
Okay, and Jamie and Kyle.
See, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jamie. This is Kyle. We've been together for almost 5 years. We are one of those digital age couples, so we met on Twitter. It definitely goes down in the DMs.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And we're engaged. Okay. So we'll be getting married next year as well. So look for the dates.
Yay. Awesome. Okay. Congratulations. So I just want to say that I know, personally know each of these couples. And, you know, like Natasha, I've known the longest and I have the, I guess, the most experience with her experience in her relationship. And I just have really always admired the relationship that her and O'Neill have. And it's exemplary to me, honestly. They got married when we were still like in college or right out of college, and they're still together, which I don't know that I can say that about any of my other college buddies. And so I think it's really beautiful. And Natasha seriously will, you know, she's like, I am happily married. I love my husband. And that has been what she has said from day one all the way up to year 20. And so so it's really, really beautiful. And I am honored that they were willing to join us on the show. And Miss Lori, I just adore Miss Lori. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Michael Marie until today, but I'm just so excited that you guys are able to be here with us. And I can't wait to hear more about your love story. And I appreciate you being here to join us. We're very excited.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And for Jamie and Kyle, you guys are our local couple. And I was like, can we find a Black couple who's happy and willing to come on the show for this episode? I was like, locally, I have no idea. I was drawing a blank. And then Jamie popped in my head and I was like, wait, there's Jamie and Kyle. And so, again, like, I'm just super excited that you guys are here, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more about your story and your journey. And again, congratulations on your upcoming nuptials. So let's jump in. I'm going to start with Miss Lori and Michael Marie. Can you share about how you guys met?
We met on Match.com as well. We're part of the digital age as well. And I think that I was the first person that you met. Well, a few people she like DM'd on the sly, I guess, but I was the first person of good deeds for her. So I think we had a great love story because, you know, you have to go through hundreds. I mean, I went through hundreds of people sending me things, and they just didn't say the right thing, but she just said the right thing. It just made me interested. And then she just continued to kind of say the right things at the right time frame. And it was right before COVID scenario. So we went on our first date, I think it was the end of January. And we had a date in February, then COVID hit, and that kind of like threw everything off. So I think we were saying, well, maybe we shouldn't see through COVID. We was like, we're going to see each other. So we start dating, and we have not separated since that weekend of Easter weekend, 4/10 of 2020. Oh, so well, you know what? I don't care about COVID. I'm going to go see this woman. They're like, don't do it. I was like, I'm doing it. I'm going to go. So, and then everything is just built from there. So now we live together. We're going to get married and all those good things that any happy couple would do.
That is so awesome. Yay. Congratulations. Okay. So Jamie and Kyle, you said you met on Tinder, right?
Twitter.
Oh, I'm sorry. Whoops.
It's probably weird. Like, what? Twitter?
On Twitter. Oh, okay. So that's even more interesting because, how did that happen? I don't even know how Twitter works, to be honest. I have never tweeted a thing in my life. And I don't. Do they have like a dating section of Twitter, or did you guys just tweet each other like randomly? How did that go?
Well, they don't have a dating section like Facebook now has, but Twitter is more or less just people from all around the world sharing their thoughts about whatever, you know, from everything from I just went to the bathroom to did you see that Suns trade or da 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 da. I mean, or they're doing politics. So there's a bunch of different, you know, sections of Twitter. And so Kyle's actually been in Juneau for like, you know, over 10 years. And prior to Juneau, I actually lived in Phoenix, and we were following each other for quite some time. But I was just like, oh, there's a Black guy living in Alaska. I'm like, eh. And then plus, like, you know, he had kids. So I definitely was just like, oh, that's just, he's cool. But he's just, you know, an internet friend, you know?
Yeah, but then she came up. For a visit in 2018. Mm-hmm. And for those not local to Juneau, that was a beautiful summer, an exemplary summer. I think it only rained like, you know, five times that entire summer. So that was the time that she came up and I told her, Juno is catfishing you. You know, I was like, Juno's got the makeup on, the push-up bra. You know, she's looking good. Like, it's not normally like this. But, you know, we went whale watching on our first date. It went well. An impromptu job interview. You know, it was, it just, everything just kind of clicked. And everything just kept, you know, making it easy to choose her.
Yep. As a matter of fact, one of the people who interviewed me was actually Christina Michelle's mom. And so I was just like, oh, there are other Black people here, you know? And again, everything would just kind of like fell into place perfectly. Like there was so many areas where, you know, it could have been hiccups, but everything was just so seamless from getting the job to him actually coming down to Phoenix and driving up with me to Bellingham to put my car on the ferry. I mean, everything went just so smoothly. And my dad was just like,
that's what I do. That's what I do.
Even when I first moved up here, I wasn't necessarily, you know, sold on the idea of calling Kyle my boyfriend. I still just kind of like, you know, he's a friend. And my dad was just like, you know, your contract is only a year. And if it doesn't work out in a year or whatever, not whether, you know, the relationship or the job, you can always come back home. You don't have nothing to lose. You're getting old. I was like, geez, old man, like, you know, lay it on that. And, you know, I'm happy I did take that leap of faith and I definitely don't regret it. He's my best friend. If I'm not with him, unfortunately, I miss him.
Gotcha. I know. I ran in the door to get home.
I love that. That is so beautiful. Thank you for sharing, Jamie and Kyle.
Welcome.
All right, Natasha and O'Neill, how did you guys meet?
We met my freshman year in college. We were little babies in Princeton, New Jersey. And actually, we didn't like each other. She was dating one of my friends. And I wasn't really into her. I'm like, not really my type or whatever. and I guess things weren't going well with the friend and things weren't going well for me. I was concerned about financial aid and stuff like that. So we kind of started confiding in each other and, you know, comforting each other and from comforting to coupling. It was a very unconventional start to a relationship. And our first date was with her family. They were in town to visit. And that was our first date.
Yeah, I think Carlos had, he was at Duke University freshman year. And they were playing in New York at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And so I brought him along because he was like the first boy that I wanted to share with my family. And it was just like,
it was a weird experience.
I was going to ask, O'Neill, were you intimidated by the first date with her family?
The whole family, like the
big family,
everybody was there. It wasn't intimidating. It was very strange, but they were very kind and very warm towards me. And that made it a little less weird, but it's not a blueprint. I don't recommend it.
No, it was good. I would say what attracted me to O'Neill right away is that he smelled really good.
Like, yes.
I remember we met outside of the dorms and he looked so sad. And I gave him in college, you hug people. And I hugged him and it was just like coming home. Like he smelled really good. Mm. And our first kiss was like amazing. Right. And so I knew from like the beginning that he was the one for me at 19 and he was 18. So what do you know when you're 18, 19? But we've been together ever since. Very long time.
Okay. Well, that kind of brings me to my next question is, which is when did you know that you were in love? Actually, I'm going to ask this first. Do you believe in love at first sight? Even if you don't feel like you experienced it, do you believe in it? Number one. And then the next question is, when did you know that you were in love with your person?
are going to go in the same order?
Yeah, sure. Michael, Marie, go for it.
Well, I would actually say from my first day, it was just comfortable. We had a lot in common. And even though we didn't hug right away, I still felt that embrace just by the way she smiled so warmly when I walked up. And, you know, she told me all the things she was thinking later, but sexual things won't bring up. But I was like, she's so sweet. And she was just so comforting and just did little things that just made me just feel real comfortable. You know, she wanted to make sure, of course, I get in the door. She's trying to open the door for me and without breaking it, making sure no one else goes. And just little things and making sure that I just got my food right. They messed up our food like 3 times. We had so much fun because so many things was happening in front of us. Like the guy brought the food wrong 3 times. We just had fun about this guy riding my motorcycle in front of us, dropped the motorcycle, trying to show off. And there were just so many funny things that happened. And then we had to talk our way even to get in because they wanted to card us to get in. I was like, do we look like we're under 21? We just want food. I'm just so hungry. Could you just feed me, please? And so they was like, okay, you guys come in. So just like, it just felt real relaxing. So she was the one who was really scared because I said, is your heart available for love? And she almost fainted.
Wow. What a great question.
I said, well, I didn't say I loved you, wasn't love you. I just want to know if you're free for it. I mean, because I just want to know. I just want to truly know in the beginning. God, that's how I am. And so she was like, oh my God. So she told me she went back to all of her male friends, like, oh my God, she said the L word. Just like, I just kind of laughed.
But I think that one of the first weekends that she left and went over to her family, we had a date. And then she said, I need to go out to my family. And I really incredibly missed her. And I don't watch football. And I started watching a football movie. And I was like, what am I doing? You know, I started watching on Any Given Sunday or something
like
that.
I love football.
And she loves football. And I sent her a message and I said, I'm watching a movie about football, you know? And so I knew then, because I had missed her so, that
aww.
I liked her.
Okay. Jamie and Kyle, any thoughts on love at first sight and when you knew you were in love with your person?
So love at first sight, I don't necessarily believe in because I was already into her before I even was in the same room with her. You know, it was, we met on Twitter. It was one of those things where we talked about common interests all the time, you know, so we were talking about football, and we were talking about life and politics and, you know, our crazy families and, you know, all this other stuff. So it reached a point where, you know, we were talking to each other every day, all day, you know, while I'm in the middle of work, you know, and it just didn't feel right if we weren't talking, you know. So after a while, she was already a part of my day to day before we even met. So when she came up, it was hilarious, you know, because again, the date went swimmingly. She came up for a weekend, you know, it was like 75 degrees the entire time. Gorgeous, you know, whale watching on the first date after an impromptu job interview. She was falling asleep after watching whales like 10 feet from us. Right. So it was an emotional, crazy high. It was
fairy tale. Time,
you know, and then she fell asleep on my arm. Right. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I can get used to this. You know, I was like, I can really get used to this. And then after the date, you know, just the night before she left, you know, we went for a drive out the road and we're out looking up at the stars. And she was just like, so what are we? And I was like, you beat me to it. I was like, we locked in. That's what we is. So I was just like, but you beat me to it. I was going to let you know what it is in a little bit. But, you know, you beat me to it. So I was like, so is you my boyfriend now or what? And I was like, yeah. Me to it. But so then the weekend went well. After that, she went home. And I remember talking to her on FaceTime. And I was like, hey, you know, I'm coming to get you. You know, I'm just letting you know when you're ready. Just let me know. I'm going to talk to your parents. And I'm going to let them know that she's here now. Y'all can come visit. Y'all welcome. But she's going to be here now. And then a month later, I went to go get her. That's so nice. Month later, I'm meeting her parents for the first time. Like, hey, I'm the guy from Alaska taking your daughter up to Alaska. Y'all can come visit and fish. Bye, y'all. Like, it was literally a one day turnaround. It was hilarious. I was like, hey, y'all, nice to meet you. I'm not an axe murderer. You know, I have a good job and my kids love me and so does my mama. You know, we're going up to Alaska, though. Y'all can come visit.
You are hilarious.
And mind you, I'm the one who asked, you know, what are we? Where is this going? But the whole time, but it's like, do I want a boyfriend yet? You know? But I was the one who even asked.
Mm-hmm. She was like, so what are we?
That is so true.
Okay, Natasha and O'Neill, love at first sight. And when did you know you were in love?
It was not love at first sight. I believe he thought I was spoiled. And I thought he was just different. He's Jamaican, like very Jamaican. And I'm from Alaska, didn't have a lot of Black culture growing up. So we were very different. But he makes me laugh. He made me laugh. And he still makes me laugh. We laugh all the time. And he really takes good care of me and our children. And he's just a very genuine person. But I think after we had been together for a little while and got to know each other better, we were definitely in love and in it, like, fully. But it was not love at first sight, not at all.
Do you believe in love at first sight? Do you believe it's possible?
I think it's possible, but that wasn't, you know, really the story for us. Yeah. I feel like our relationship was a experiment that God was doing, and thankfully it was a successful one, because, you know, talk about exact opposites. You know, when we first met, I was into the beach and all of that stuff, and she was into snow activities and, you know, just exact opposites. But what mattered was the things that were important to agree on, like how we were going to live our lives and how we wanted to raise our children and putting God first in whatever we're doing. Like, those important things, I think, kind of was the glue that solidified our relationship.
Beautiful. Well, if you're just joining us here on Culture Rich Conversations, I'm Christina Michelle, and I have been having a conversation with Natasha Boozer and O'Neill Cassells, her husband, and Jamie and Kyle and Michael Marie and Miss Lori Grace. And we are going to continue this conversation about Black love in just a moment. We'll be right back.
And grass. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle, and I am here today having a conversation about Black love just in time for Valentine's Day. So before we went to break, our couple shared about how they met and how they knew that their partner was the one for them. And we're just going to continue this conversation. I would love for each of you to share what your idea of the Black lived experience is for Black relationships, because Culture Rich Conversations is all about the Black lived experience on lots of different things. And so when you hear Black lived experience and you think of it in terms of Black love or relationships, like what thoughts come to mind? And you can nominate yourself for who will go first.
I'll go. This is Lori. You know, we were talking about this last night, that our parents have been so instrumental in being a focal point as far as culture and Black love. Their example of loving each other unconditionally and just being that example, the way that they look at each other when they're around. I mean, that has set such a standard for us to want to reach. Mm. You know, when we go out into the community and when we see older couples, or we see people holding hands and we hear how long they've been married. You know, last year we had a chance to attend my uncle and aunt's 50th wedding anniversary, watch them slow dance like it was their wedding day, you know. And it's just being around family and other couples that have inspired us with a tremendous joy to want to reach longevity.
I love that. Thank you, Miss Lori.
I guess I'll go ahead and go. The Black lived experience, especially as a couple. Well, I have a lot of thoughts on it, but I'll keep it short. It's funny, when I first told people that I was moving to Alaska, they were like, "You're going to see a white man, aren't you?" I was like, "What?" I was like, "Black people live in Alaska too?" You know, I came from a family as well where my parents, they don't have a perfect marriage, but they've been together for almost 40 years and they know how to work things out. And I've always just looked at them and other couples in my life, because I grew up in the church as well. And we're just like, you know what? I love, you know, well, first of all, I love being Black. And I always loved Black couples in general. I'm like, you know what? I want to be with someone that, you know, when there's issues going on in the world, not only can they sympathize with me, but they can empathize with me because they have that experience of being Black. I don't have to explain to my Black partner, you know, microaggressions that I might have had throughout the day and worry about him not understanding it or thinking that, oh, it's just in your head. Nope. He lives it too. He understands, you know, how it is to be, you know, a Black man in the society. And so he understands, you know, even for myself, even though he's not a woman, but he understands being Black. And having that commonality is really important to me. I mean, it's just funny because media, we really try to push that, you know, everybody's in these interracial couples, and which interracial couples, those are perfectly fine, you know, love who you love, but there's nothing wrong with, you know, being a Black couple and being proud about being a Black couple. I'm very proud that, you know, I'm with a Black man. I mean, it brings joy to my heart, you know, it really does, you know, it's just awesome. I mean, I could say certain things to him and, or just give him a look. He understands the look.
Yeah, that look.
I don't have to explain the look to him, you know. It's just awesome just being on the same page from a cultural standpoint. Like, he's not going to ask me, you know, why my certain favorite foods are what they are. And he's not going to, you know, get mad about me using a bunch of Cajun seasonings, because he understands that's just, you know, who I am. And that's a part of the culture, you know.
Yeah. He's not going to ask you if he can touch your hair.
Exactly. And he better not touch my bonnet either.
That's right. He knows that unspoken rule.
I am trained.
Natasha, did you want to add anything, or O'Neill?
Yes, I just wanted to echo what Miss Lori and Jamie and Kyle were saying. It's the same thing. You have someone who understands your curves, and they understand your hair texture, and they understand the struggle you have with systemic racism at your job, at the grocery store, when you go into get the gas station. They understand. You don't have to explain it to them. Like they said, there's just a look, and they get it, and they can comfort you the way that you need to be comforted. So to me, I think the Black lived experience of being in a loving relationship is that they understand you, and you don't have to explain it to them. You don't have to justify it or make them understand what you're going through and what you're feeling, because they just know. And they also know how to be there for you, how to comfort you, how to support you, how to encourage you. And it is a very beautiful thing, at least for me, to be married to another Black person, because you just feel that commonality. You feel connected already.
Thank you, Natasha. what are some misconceptions about Black love that you have seen or heard in our society?
I think one of the major things I feel kind of sometimes in totality with different races is it's not valued. They don't value that the unit of Black relationships. And even for us, female
to female, we have that extra dynamic. They don't value the sincere appreciation. Like, I love this woman, right? This is going to be my baby forever, you know? So, you know, and to respect that. And so I think that's one of the major things that sometimes, like you're saying, how hard I might have it at work if someone knows my sexuality. I have that from being African-American woman. Then it's like, why are you gay? Like, you know, or why do you like women? You know, it's like, we're in a professional environment. Why would you even ask me that question? Or why you ask me to touch my hair? People have still asked me that at work sometimes. Mm. This happened just the last couple of years. I've been like, that is just so inappropriate to me. And so I never actually, you know, and I try to put it back on them. It's like, how would you, you know, it's like, for example, when I'm described as the Black woman in that office, right? But you never hear, for example, the white woman in that office, go see the white woman in that office. And there happened to be two Black women in her office. And they came up to me wrongly one day and they was talking to me like I just knew who they were. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, who you are. And they's like, oh, and they felt like, oh, I was looking for a woman named Sheila. And I said, oh, they told you it was the Black woman in the office, obviously, right? And so things like that happen. And so we do give that look sometimes quite a bit, like, oh gosh. So I would say though, but we're definitely accepted most places, but we still, it could be a little dicey. It depends on where we are and what type of environment. But so we act accordingly, like maybe we should just leave early or it just depends. So, you know, but we try to be very open and just honest about who we are because, you know, at the same time we've been places and sometimes it happens with women too. They flirt with one of us and then you can tell we're together, or if Amanda's just like, you can tell we're together. You know, would you want me to do that to your wife? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, stuff, things like that, I would say. Could be issues.
Thank you, Michael Marie. Jamie?
I have a good one. I mentioned it earlier. A misconception here is Black men in Alaska don't date Black women. Yes, they do. They're more than happy and willing to. A huge misconception we always hear all the time. Once a Black man gets money, he gets a white woman. That's not true. Over 80% of Black men who make over $100,000 are married to a Black woman. So, you know, don't let all the negative naysay stuff, you know, shy you away from being in a Black couple relationship.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Thank you, Jamie.
I just wanted to say, I think misconceptions that they have about Black love and Black relationships is that they are not stable, right? That the father always leaves. But I can attest, my parents have been married for 46 years. And that was a great example for me and my marriage, that longevity does exist, that commitment does exist, that the romance does carry past 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. And I think that that's not talked about, that's not shown enough in America. I think that it's so important to show that Black love and the Black love experience of loving relationship is just like any other healthy, loving relationship. We just happen to have a little more pigment than everybody else, you know, but the love is real and it does exist. And it's more common than not.
Yeah, I love that you said that.
My grandparents were married 66 years, 11 months and 11 days. And I know that because my grandfather wanted people to know. So he had us to write it in her obituary, 66 years, 11 months and 11 days. So I've had longevity family roots. Like I said, my aunt and uncle celebrated 50 years. My parents, I have two sets of parents, but my dad and his wife, 43 years this year, my mom and her husband, it will be 39 years. So it's there.
Well, what do you think the elements are for a long-lasting relationship? Like, what's needed to get to 50-plus years?
Okay, well, I'll start myself with that one.
Okay.
I really think that you have to be able to communicate. It is essential that you can communicate with each other, but it's an essential that you know the base part of what you are, who you are, too. It's really hard to share with someone and have a really good positive relationship if you're not able to know the base part of who you are and give each other room to change. Hopefully you change and grow for the best together. But And the little things that, you know, you get irritated about, learn how to let those things go where they don't, you know, because in the long run, we have so many great days, some perfect days. And then, you know, one little element, don't let that derail you as far as the positivity you bring to the relationship. Because even though, you know, it's like, you know, like little, you see peas in the pot, little kittens, they be like, you love each other and they get mad, you should smack each other. And they, you know, let those little things just roll off your back. And to think about that, sometimes all of our emotions are not real emotions in the long term. But we have quick emotions sometimes, and we have to think through those emotions. Let sometimes our mind give ourselves, that time to breathe things through and think about it. Is this a real issue, or is it just so minor that it just, you know, let it go? And those little things don't always try to call each other's faults out. You know, sometimes just like give those positive reinforcements, you know, if you want to move in one direction rather than you didn't do this, you didn't do that. And try to work that, and then be self-deprecating, you know, be able to say, oh man, should have had a V8 today, you know, and do it right, you know, really treat people how you want to be treated, how you want to be commit to how you want to be treated too, and be willing to give it. That's my 2 cents.
Thank you, Michael Marie. Jamie?
I 100% agree with Michael Marie. I mean, first and foremost, as she said, communication is key. I mean, we talk about everything. It doesn't even matter how small it is. One thing we like to always be is on the same page. I don't care how we got to get there. We want to be on the same page. Also, being willing to, you know, apologize. Like me, anybody who knows me, I could be super, you know, type A kind of bullish. And so, like, I have to, you know, sometimes remember to turn that off, you know, when I come home from work. And if I am still on that, you know, high alert level, I tell them like, hey, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't mean to speak to you like that. I didn't mean to do this. And so just being willing to, you know, apologize and correct those mistakes and quickly. One thing I believe in is, you know, never going to bed angry. Like, you work out those issues before you go to bed at night. Don't let them just linger and fester, you know? Don't you want to treat your best friend as good as you can? I mean, there's nobody in this world I should be treating better than Kyle, period. Right. He's my partner. I mean, and I try to just remember that every single day. I mean, if I know he's having a hard day, I'm checking in on him. What's going on? Give me an update. Let me know what's happened. Speak to me, you know? So just always keeping those lines of communication open and doing my best to always go above and beyond, because can't nobody treat Kyle better than I treat Kyle. And I refuse for everybody to treat Kyle better than I treat Kyle.
Tell him how it is. Nice.
Well, I'm looking at Kyle and he looks like a happy man. So.
Love it here.
And Natasha or O'Neill, did you want to add anything?
No. Well, for us, is we continue to put in the same, we keep that same energy, and we try to always keep that same energy from the beginning. You know, all that, those things that we did to make each other happy in the beginning of our relationship, you know, we continue to keep the doors of communication wide open, because a lot of relationships that were close to us, you know, just simple misunderstanding and people not coming together and talking it out. And if you need help, you know, this is a big plug for therapy. I know it's a touchy subject for some people, but we were in therapy, even though we weren't really in any type of danger. We're just like, you know what? We're young. There's a lot of things that we need to know, and we care about a relationship, and we always protect our relationship. And sometimes you have to do that, like you would protect a baby, you know, from, you know, haters and people, you know, trying to break you guys up for whatever reason. You know, your relationship is something precious, and we treat it as that, as a gift. And, you know, we do our best to take care of it and continue to put in that work every day, no days off.
So what are your thoughts on counseling, like premarital counseling or, I mean, therapy? I love that, O'Neill, that you took us there. did you guys get premarital counseling? And if you, or if you
absolutely
did, why? Okay.
Yeah, we had premarital counseling. And even, you know, after years, just before we had our daughter, we went to another marital counseling group therapy type class that had to do with love and respect, you know, and learning each other's love language and us understanding that, you know, for a man, respect is very important, you know, and it's not even about what you're saying. Sometimes it's how you're saying it. You could be saying the right thing, but you know, if it's not said in the right way, then that creates conflict. And the other side of that, if I'm not speaking lovingly, I could be saying the right thing, but if it's not coming through with love, by the time it filters through, you know, before you know it, we're on some crazy cycle or whatever. So I think understanding each other's love language and understanding each other's needs a little better definitely gave us the tools, you know, to take care of our relationship and keep it moving forward in a healthy way.
Thank you, O'Neill. I'm going to ask Miss Lori and Michael Marie, because what O'Neill just said sparked something for me. Like, we're always taught that, like, men need respect and admiration, and women need, I think it's like recognition and something. I can't remember, like, in all the premarital counseling, you know, books and marriage books and stuff like that. How does that play out in a relationship where you're the same sex? And would you say that you need the same things, or like, how does that go?
I don't think we need the same things. We're actually, I mean, there's a base foundation of some of the same things we need, but she's much more verbal affirmation than I am. Like, I have to make sure, like, say, like what O'Neill said was very strong, that I have to speak to her always in a loving way. Like, for example,
my love language is words of affirmation.
So I have very much that eight type personality too. Like, I'm, you know, and sometimes she's like, I don't like the way you said that to me, you know, you didn't say with love and care. I was like, okay. All right, let me back up. I'm sorry, babe. So that is extremely important. And actually, she's asked me to do the pre-marriage counseling. And so me, I'm like, why don't you do that? You know, I don't think I need to do that. She's like, we should do it. And just listening to O'Neill really makes me say, okay, the way he phrased that makes me even more open-minded, you know, because I was probably going to do it anyway, because she's going to talk me into it, but it makes me say, oh, you know, this, you know, something I'll be willing to explore for her, to meet that need for her. So definitely it was something so that I would do. But I think that I definitely need respect the way that, you know, I think we had one of our few arguments we had is because the way she talked to me, and I was like, do not talk to me like that. You know, I was like, I do not. It's like, because it could be a trigger for me if you say something that reminds me of a bad relationship from the past. And those are all the things that I think you have to work on to keep yourself in a certain plane, you know, that, you know, that's not the ex. But at the same time, it could be a trigger, and you have to mentally and emotionally work through those things. And so I think that I just live by that. I want her to know that I'm in love with her, and I love her, that I've committed to her. And so I try just to do the things that she knows, that the little things that maybe I'm not as verbal as she wants me to be every day, but I try. Like, I try when I get up in the morning and say, I love you. Good morning. You know, the first Aww. Thing.
You're giving her those words of affirmation. I love it. Well, for those who are not familiar with the love languages, there's a book called The Five Love Languages, and they are acts of service, gift giving, words of affirmation, quality time, and physical touch. And the idea is that we all receive and perceive and give love in a particular way. Usually we have, you know, one of those five are the strongest ways that we feel love, and we tend to give love in the way that we want to receive it. So understanding how your partner receives and gives and perceives love is really important, because, you know, like Michael Marie said, if she's not a words of affirmation person, you know, she has to be intentional about giving Miss Lori those words of affirmation, whereas maybe hers is quality time or acts of service. And so they have to, like, know.
Acts of service.
Yeah, I'm very action oriented. Like, you can tell me anything you want, but you don't prove it, then I'm like, that you don't mean it.
That's huge. What advice would you give to those who are single, since you are all partnered, for those who are looking for love? Like, what would you say?
Whose turn is it? Whose turn is it? Okay, I'll start. I think that you have to be emotionally in the place to be open enough to pretty much bring that in your life. Because sometimes, you know, if you've gone through a bad breakup or you're in a place where you're not emotionally ready yourself, you can't even be available to receive love, I think, at that time. So if you need to work through some emotional things yourself first to be ready to receive it, and then be open enough that, you know, when you meet someone, it's just like you could, you know, like, you know, when you're young, if you have siblings, I can look at a movie, my brother, my sister can look at me, we could all have a different opinion about something. So give that new person in your life at least a chance that if you disagree, that you at least are open enough to receive them without being like, you should be this way or you should be that way. I mean, like, Anil said one thing that he didn't feel that they were each other's type when they met, but eventually you have to just get to know them, because that person you might not think is your type is the exact person for you, the exact person that you need for that meets your love language. But you have to be open enough to be willing enough to explore and not cut someone off the first thing that you think that they do that you don't like. I think that would be my lasting advice.
Thank you, Michael Marie. Jamie, go ahead.
I'd say, knowing my friends that are single and the different struggles that they have, one of the number one things that I noticed is, you know, set realistic expectations for your partner. You cannot expect perfection from anyone. Like, you're not perfect. So guess what? Nobody else is going to be perfect either. One thing that I've seen that's gotten quite popular is people will make these real long list of, my person has to have A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And if they don't, then they're not even going to get a date from me. You know, why are you limiting the already small dating pool? It's like, yes, you should have like some core beliefs that you're going to, you know, stick to your guns, but you shouldn't be sticking to your guns, whether or not something as, you know, arbitrary as height. Like, I see a lot of people have a height requirement. It's like, they can't help that God made them short.
Right.
You're an excellent man because they're 1 inch shorter than what you require. So it's like, we got to have an honest, you know, conversation of what's really important, and arbitrary things like height, it doesn't matter. I mean, be willing to, you know, get yourself out of that little bitty box and really explore, you know, what truly is a person. Like, is that person honest? Are they kind? Like, why aren't those type of things on the list? Why is it all so material? They have to make at least $80,000. Man, can somebody, like, you know, earn up to that? Can they work their way up? I mean, why do you need so much money? Why are you requiring somebody to make more money than you do? Like, why can't you guys be poor and happy together? You know, at least you won't be lonely at the very end of the day. Not right now, you're poor and lonely. You could be poor and in a couple relationship, you know? At the very least, a dual income, so maybe you're not as poor anymore, you know?
Jamie, that's so funny.
Thank you.
I think for me, you have to make sure that you're open and healed and be a whole person before you enter into any type of relationship, because it's very dangerous to bring past trauma and unhealed wounds into a new relationship, because it kind of clouds your vision and clouds your heart. So if your heart isn't healed and your eyes aren't open, you know, you're putting yourself in a dangerous situation, you know. So those things can cloud how you think and how you feel, even though that's not really what's happening. You know, that kind of creates a different narrative in your head, which kind of destroys a relationship before it even gives itself a chance. And also, you got to keep your eyes open too, you know, watch for the red flags as well. You know, don't let the lovey-dovey stuff have your eyes look aside and be like, oh my goodness, this person could be narcissistic or, you know, whatever. And then, you know, you're in a full blown relationship and you're like, oh no, you know, I didn't pay attention to these signs or whatever. So, you know, you got to be open, open heart, open mind, open eyes.
I love that.
I would just say also one of the best advice we ever got during premarital counseling, which I think is great because you don't know everything about a person. And when you marry them, it's a different world. But I would say the best advice I ever got was to keep people out of your relationship because you're going to have conflict. You're going to struggle. You're going to go through things and then you will get through those things. But the people that you let into your relationship and you share every single detail, they're going to still see that person as the person they were when they caused you pain. Mm-hmm. And so like with O'Neill and I, you'll never hear me talk about the problems we have, especially if they're like serious ones we have to work through. We will work through them and we'll speak to a marriage counselor or a pastor, but we don't talk about our little issues or whatever with friends and family because that's private and personal and you should be allowed to work through them and grow through them and then move on. That's just my little advice.
I love that, Natasha. People do, you know, they talk way too much to everybody about their issues. And you're right, because when they're upset and they talk to a friend, the friend is going to be on their side. And then you get over it because your partner made it okay with you, but they didn't make it okay with all your friends and all the people you complained to, you know, so they're still mad. And then that can affect how, you know, they see your relationship and you guys. So thank you for saying that. So we are right at the end of this segment, and I'm going to go ahead and take us to break. And before I do, I just want to say thank you again for you guys, for your time and for coming. Is there anything you would like to close with? Okay. For those who are listening, I'm looking at a screen of Zoom and they're like smiling and nodding and shaking their heads. So we're going to go to break. If you have anything you can share when we get back. I'm Christina Michelle. This is Culture Rich Conversations and we'll be right back.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
I want to thank my guests, Michael Marie and Lori Grace, Kyle Paugh and Jamie Cowan, and Natasha Boozer and her husband, O'Neill Cassells, for sharing their stories with us this afternoon. It was such a great conversation, and I do believe a lot of people listening have learned so much about Black love and the Black lived experience about being in relationships. We are very happy to have had them today, and we appreciate all of you for coming and for your time. Today in Black history, we celebrate Leroy Satchel Page. On February 9th, 1971, Page became the first African-American to be nominated for the Baseball Hall of Fame. And then later in August of that same year, he was officially inducted. His career in baseball spanned 5 decades, starting with the Negro League and then on to the Major League. At the age of 42, he was baseball's oldest rookie. Satchel Page was a pitching legend known for his fastball and for his showmanship. We honor his memory today as we continue to celebrate Black History Month. We appreciate you for listening today, and we look forward to hearing any feedback you have. You have our email address. It's junobaa@gmail.com, and you can find us on Facebook by just searching JunoBAA. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 33734, Juneau, Alaska 99803. Today's show was produced by Natasha Boozer. We'll meet again next week. And in the meantime, may your life be blessed and flow with ease. I'm Christina Michelle, and this has been Culture Rich Conversations.
Culture Rich Conversations is made possible by a grant from the Social Justice Fund Grant Program of the Alaska Community Foundation.
Culture Rich Conversations on Juno Afternoon is sponsored in part by Mark Stofa and Sarah Hannon of the Alaska Wild Salmon Company, delivering fresh salmon to Juno homes since 2006. Learn more at goodsalmon.com or 907-321-4997.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich. Culture Rich.